Hola, hola, y bienvenidos a Tu Salud, the definitive podcast for Latinx health policy, where we talk about all things Latinidad, health, and policy. I am Dr. Ceci Aquino, Executive Director at the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. And today, we have an exciting conversation about mental health. We are being joined by a rock star mental health advocate, Latina influencer, and champion of mental health for our comunidades. Adriana Alejandra Alejandre will be sharing some tips today on just cultural innate solutions to mental health, talking about the importance of making sure that we are taking care of our mental health, and giving us some advice on how to pause in our busy days. Bueno, muy buenos días. Bienvenida, Alejandra.
Gracias.
A tu salud. Well, welcome to our podcast. You know, at LCHC, we really like to just tell our stories, right? The work that we do can be heavy, and sometimes we forget that at the end of the day, we're all people. We're all passionate about this because many of us have faced the difficulties that now we try to, you know, find solutions for and help our communities with.
That's right.
So welcome. And we're so excited to get to know you a little bit better today.
Muchas gracias. I'm really excited to be here. It's a beautiful day. And yeah, I look forward to talking about all sorts of things, my story and policy.
Definitely. Definitely. It's nice and chilly today, huh?
It is. Yeah. Just not in this room.
Not in the room.
Yeah.
Well, let's get started with just your story. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself, where you come from, who you are?
Yeah, so I am, I'll say my name. My name is Adriana Alejandra Alejandre, and I don't know why my parents gave me that middle name that rhymes, you know, is basically like my last name, pero soy guatemalteca y mexicana. I'm a first gen, and I am, from my sibling order, the second oldest.
Okay.
The first in the family to go to college and get a master's degree and have a career, you know, really live up to my parents' idea of that American dream from the 90s. Yeah. And when I was in my first year of college, I became a single mother at 19 years old. And so my son now is turning 14, which is wild. That was such a long time ago.
Congratulations.
Muchas gracias. Sí, y pues I am a therapist, specifically a trauma therapist. Yeah. I own a group practice now in Burbank, California, even though we're virtual. Y pues I do a lot of different things. Yeah. I do public speaking. I do podcasting también. And I also run a lot of groups. I run Latinx Therapy, which is the podcast, but also a directory of Latinx therapists across the nation.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. 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 So there's a lot there.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Let me ask you a little bit more about your background, just in growing up. And, you know, being Latina, I'm also Chapina, by the way, so we have that connection. But just wondering about how your background inspires who you are and how it keeps you rooted in the work.
Oh, that's such a good question. I think my background is everything to me. Mm. I keep it so present.
Yeah.
And with my work, but on the personal side, it keeps me grounded. Yesterday, I was having a conversation, actually, with my husband about identity, specifically with about my son's identity, because he's second gen. And basically, the premise of that conversation was that identity gives me, our identity gives me purpose and meaning in life.
Yeah.
It helps me understand myself and understand what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so I always keep it muy presente con todo. And so I think just to keep it in a nutshell, eso es for me. It guides me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I trust my instincts because of my background as well.
Yeah.
Like I just keep my lineage in mind and I keep in mind the suffering as well of my ancestors and their resiliency and imagine how proud they are of me and my family today.
1000%. Yeah. I'm so proud that you're here with us and everything that you have accomplished and what you're doing for the community. I think many times mental health is such a, can be a very heavy topic, right? Yeah, there has been a lot of stigma in our communities regarding mental health. And I think with your work, you make it so accessible. It feels like a friendly space to walk into. So thank you for doing that for our community.
Gracias, gracias. Yeah, I think that's the goal. And you said it perfectly, to be able to provide that accessibility and not make it so taboo.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's debunk all the misconceptions about it, because it's a day-to-day, if not minute-to-minute thing among us humans.
Yeah, 100%. Can I ask you, what led you from, you know, perhaps seeing clients on a one-to-one basis to reimagining the way that you were providing services and making mental health more accessible through social media and other platforms?
See, honestly, it was my frustration. So I got licensed in 2017.
Okay.
And I was already an intern at a private practice, but since I was licensed, I went solo.
Okay.
So I opened my own practice. And within weeks to very few months, I got booked.
Wow.
So my entire schedule, I just was referring out a lot of people that were calling in, and they were first time therapy seekers. And many of them were also willing to drive out from Bakersfield, from San Diego. And I was just like, this isn't right. Like, this isn't fair to them. One, to be on a wait list. Two, to be so frustrated and be willing to drive out to me. That is like 2 hours away, you know, or if not more, for them to be able to get services with someone that they culturally identify with, and also somebody that speaks Spanish.
Right.
And so I was like, this isn't right. Like, I remember growing up, my family always told me, if it doesn't exist, you could do it.
Yes.
Tú lo puedes hacer.
Yes.
And so that's, I took it upon myself to think, how can I create more accessibility to the mental health information that's happening in sessions?
Yes.
Because on the other side of things, I was providing therapy, and it wasn't what I was seeing on TV, you know, or on TV or on movies, where typically, very respectfully, right, we see white men as either therapists or psychologists, and the conversations seem to be very dull, the therapy sessions. And that, I was like, that is just not what happens. Like, healing happens in other ways as well, and through other conversations, not just those traditional questions.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think I need to bring in other and find other Latinx therapists to be able to hold these conversations and ideas. And so YouTube was really big in 2018, but I have been very shy. And so I was like, I can't do YouTube. Let me do podcasting. So I took a course to study how to become a podcaster.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then I launched Latinx Therapy while also launching a Facebook group called, at that time, it was Latino Therapists.
Okay.
And so people started trickling in. And then, you know, we changed the name to a more gender neutral, to Latinx Therapist. I pitched my idea. People were interested in being guests. And so, you know, I had the topic ideas in mind, like the first episode, When La Chancla Crosses the Line.
Oh, I love it.
What is anxiety? like demystifying bipolar disorder, because culturally we also use it kind of like as a weapon.
Right.
Right. We use a lot of pathologizing language. So that was my idea behind it. It was like, let's provide our community these episodes in podcast format. And upon launching, Apple reached out and they gave me a really nice big feature, like their biggest feature that they offer to very selected podcasts. And so I started getting emails from people asking for therapists, or like, I never thought to look for a Latina therapist. I never realized I had the choice to find a provider that relates to me culturally speaking. And so from there, you know, I was getting burnt out from providing referrals to every email manually. And I was like, I need to create a directory.
Yes.
Like, that felt right for me. And so that was a whole 9-month process as well. But here we are now. That's, you know, that's one frustration, you know, on the professional end. And on the personal end, very briefly, it was my own story with mental health struggles. I struggled, as I mentioned, I had my son in college and I had undiagnosed postpartum depression. And I had, after that, because it went untreated, it became major depression disorder. And I didn't stay in therapy because I kept my mom's words in my mind. When I got pregnant, I got in trouble and she said, "You don't talk to anybody about this. We solve things in the family. You rely on us here to figure things out. You don't call anybody. You don't tell anybody." And so talking to a therapist, that was so loud. And I was like, I can't be here. I can't stay. So was that everything started, my passion.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's so real in all of our lives, right? The different mental health barriers and, you know, challenges that come up and can influence not just that season of life, but our families, everyone around us, right? And our lives, our day-to-day. So thank you for sharing that with us. I think something that really stood out to me when you shared about your family saying, "We keep this in the family," right? I have heard that as well. There's no need to share with anybody. And it's so cultural. And, you know, be it our immigrant backgrounds, just part of being Latino, but it isolates us, right? And if we don't have the right support systems within the family, then we're basically left alone.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens to a lot of people that reach out to therapy, right? They suffered internally for so long because when they tried to ask for help or they tried to find help, either they couldn't find it or they were shamed. Because in our culture, seeking help or expressing your emotions is seen as a sign of weakness. And that's truly not it. Everybody struggles. Absolutely everybody. And it's normal. But we tend to reject the struggle or reject the emotions behind the struggle.
Right. 100%. I started going to therapy in college. It was a huge privilege to go. But I still remember my parents saying, "Oh, no, there's so much stigma. Why are you going to this? You don't need it. You can just pray about it," right? There wasn't it wasn't accepted to actually go and just talk to someone. And I think through my own journey, having, you know, access to therapy and mental health services, I was able to push my family as well, right? That's so cool. There's the beauty of the individual journey as well, right? When we're more open with our own stories and what we struggle with, we also help our family kind of catch up, right?
I think that eventually within our families that can happen. Obviously not in every family, right? But I know with my siblings, it's also been something that has been more embraced. And all of them have been in therapy, have spoken to a psychiatrist, and have realized, you know, the importance of embracing mental health services if we have the privilege to do so.
100%. And I'm actually curious about that. Do you see any patterns with the patient pool? Is it mostly youth, maybe millennials, Gen Zers that you see? Or do you also see, you know, an older population come through? I'm just curious, especially with our community, who seeks help?
You know, I think that question is going to depend probably on the therapist specialties. What I can tell you is that because I've been practicing, we'll say, I mean, before I got licensed, I was also at a nonprofit, a domestic violence center, hospital, let's say since 2016. There have been people that reach out from the entire spectrum. What I have seen even a little bit prior to the pandemic was that a lot of the adult children end up calling for their parents. Because maybe they had a conversation with their parents and or their grandparents, but that's a little bit more rare, but mostly their parents, and they end up agreeing. And so because the parents don't know how to find services, then that's where the children come in, the adult children, and they contact and they ask. And, you know, most of the time those sessions end up going great and they end up staying in therapy. Yeah. And then there's other times where, you know, they're like, I'm just doing this for my kid and I don't want to be here.
Right.
Y pues así tampoco se puede, pero yeah. sometimes those attitudes end up changing,
yes.
Depending on the connection with the therapist. But yeah, it's been children that are very accepting, teenagers, mm-hmm. a little bit hard sometimes.
Yeah.
It'll depends as well.
Right.
The entire spectrum, really.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love yeah. that. And it's so reflective of our community, right?
Mm-hmm.
The youth really supporting their adults in their household to yeah. actually receive services.
Yeah. That's yeah. great. They're trying.
Yeah. And to your point earlier, when those parents show up to the office visit, right, and they see you, someone they can feel that trust with, who they recognize as someone from their community,
yeah.
there is that increased buy-in.
Yeah, yeah. With, I would say, let's say like half of the cases, right?
Yeah,
with
yeah.
about half of the cases, there is that like, usted habla español,
aww.
You know, like you speak Spanish, and they kind of get that motivation, that yeah. buy-in as you're referring to. And then the others are still hesitant because there has been medical model harm, right?
Yeah.
Our system has not been great with,
right.
With our communities right. historically. And so we definitely understand that yeah. side of things as well. And kind of try to show up authentically and not like, very rigid and cold.
Right.
We try to make also the space our, even if it's a virtual background, as culturally connecting as
yes.
possible so that they can feel that, you know, we are with you and we're just here to help,
yeah.
Not to force you into necessarily changing or doing anything
right.
a la fuerza.
Yeah. I love that you say that because I think sometimes if you don't come from that community, there's mm-hmm. a blind spot, right?
Yeah.
Versus when we come from the community, we know what works. We know what tone works with certain folks, right?
Yeah,
how
what
to
doesn't.
Approach a certain mm-hmm. topic, what topics maybe not to approach in a more clinical, like you said, cold, rigid way,
yeah.
and how to open that conversation. So that's beautiful.
Yeah. yeah, all of that is just so important for our mm-hmm. community of any age,
yes.
of any age. Yeah, it helps the process, but I think we really have to show up for like authentically for
yeah.
the people that have never been in therapy before and that have a history of families upholding mental health stigmas. So
yeah.
that's really important in the assessment phase to understand
yeah.
How much stigma has impacted them
yeah.
and them seeking out for help and them expressing their emotions or ability or inability to express emotions.
Yeah, 100%. And let's talk about COVID. You know, the pandemic exacerbated the disparities that were already being felt, seen, and experienced by our community members.
Yeah.
How do you think the pandemic impacted our mental health?
Severely.
Yeah.
It's devastating. We still don't even know the full impact of the effects
yeah.
from the pandemic. And like I mentioned, like I think people resonate probably with what I'm mentioning and that people still feel like they're trying to come
mm-hmm.
out of it. Nobody is thriving.
Right.
People are surviving
mm-hmm.
right now, trying to
mm-hmm.
After what we experienced. And that was actually a collective trauma.
Yeah.
All of us experienced it together. And whether, you know, beliefs are the same or not, the experience was still within
yeah.
quarantine. Very, very similar and very difficult, right? For mainly, I think it was those 3 years,
yeah.
but people still to this day are still, there's still ramifications from it. There's still
right.
a lot of health fears.
We know those mental health disparities were there even before the pandemic,
yeah.
but just the pandemic, the way that it hit all of us. And like you said, it was collective trauma, right? We all experienced it, but we all experienced it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on our home situation, who was around us, that had a huge effect as well
that's
on
mm-hmm.
us being able to heal or go through it with at least some safety in the home.
But one project that I worked on during the pandemic virtually
mm-hmm.
was with farm workers
oh.
With three other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brought on through Latinx Therapy to create support groups for farm workers in Texas and Florida because they were also experiencing a lot of hardships and no protection for their health.
Yeah.
And so there was just an increase of anxiety, and there's just a lot of also discrimination going on with farm workers, but they and their children were impacted. Mm-hmm. And so we found at the end of that report, just super briefly, that depression was really high. Mm-hmm. PTSD was activated during the support groups, or I'm sorry, during the pandemic, mm-hmm. and depression that people, as you said, already had. So we were already in a mental health crisis with lack of resources available.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of organizations that tried to come together to help the community, and you know, we just couldn't wait any longer.
100%. And thank you for doing that work with our farm workers. I think our farm workers are essential to the well-being of the state, right?
Yes.
And many times they go unseen and they don't have access to just regular primary care or services like mental health services. We've been working with some partners on Indigenous Mesoamerican justice. And I'm just curious, did you see during that study any conversation get started around language access, especially for Indigenous languages?
Yeah, that was also another thing, because most of the farm workers identified as Indigenous. Mm. And so they may have spoken another language. And so it's extremely difficult to find translators, to find therapists that speak Indigenous native languages. What I do know from my time as a therapist is that, you know, I think Indigenous folks have chronic struggles, you know, with government, like there's a lot of injustices there that they're always advocating for, for their mental health as well. And so, what I know is that here in Los Angeles, there is an organization called Mi Cielo, right? And that they are doing a lot of great work to try to, almost like you said, like close that gap, right? With the native languages.
Yes, we work closely with Cielo. They're amazing.
Yeah, they really are.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you for sharing that. I think we're always asked, what's the next phase? What do Latinos want for XYZ? And I think for mental health, not just access and quality, but also let's increase access to Indigenous languages within the service care.
Yeah, yeah, that's really important because our emotions are easier to express from our first language.
Yes, yes.
And so when we express our emotions in our second or third language, there's a felt emotion that gets a little bit lost in that translation.
Yes, 100%. You mentioned earlier this mistrust with government, right? And it exists in our community. We have to be open and transparent about that. You know, it is an election year, and unfortunately, during the last presidency, we saw a lot of fear, a lot of increased mistrust. We saw a chilling effect, what we call disenrollment from safety net programs that protect the health and well-being of communities. But because folks were afraid to interact with government resources, they decided to take a step back from accessing those rights.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about, you know, as we walk into potentially a very negative narrative around the Latino community as we continue to advance this year? Any thoughts on how to take care of our community, how to take care of our own mental health?
There's so many different ways. I think it's, as a trauma therapist, it's so important for us to start within our bodies, always embracing deep breathing, going slower and slower each time as you inhale, pause and exhale, and making sure we move our bodies, because a lot of our day to day gets stored in our bodies. And that's why sometimes even doing this might be difficult for some people, because it's all the stress that's living inside. So making sure that we're always moving our bodies, wiggling, you know, even our toes, la cadera, everything.
Okay. Hips don't lie.
They do not lie. So self-touch, if people are comfortable with that in any way as well, is really important. Mm-hmm. And talking to somebody, you know, if somebody that you trust. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's looking for a therapist, right? Searching, there are directories now like mine that exist where you can find a Latino therapist. But, you know, I think as long as we're getting our thoughts out, our emotions out, that's really important for our mental health. And I cannot stress that enough. And making sure that we engage in things we enjoy, because you're right, this is an election year. And so we're going to be hearing, digesting a lot of different political things. And naturally, that's going to cause potentially political stress within us. So making sure that this ahorita, we are taking care of ourselves and that we are engaging in joy.
Yes.
Things that bring us joy, even if it's for 1 minute, 5 minutes, lo que sea. Yeah. But being so intentional about integrating joy into our schedules. It's not always go, 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 go.
Yes.
Let's go, go, pause. Go, go, pause.
I like that. I like that. Even if it's a 5 minute dance break.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Well, thank you so much for just bringing this wealth of information to us. It's really been such a blessing to be able to talk to you. Do you want to leave our audience with any resources? How do we find you on social media, your podcast, your directory? Any thoughts? Yeah.
Sure. Yes. So my directory website that holds everything can be found at latinxtherapy.com in Spanish, terapiaparalatinos.com. And let's see, the podcast can be heard on all major podcatchers. I'm everywhere on social media. There's a little bit of different parts of my life that I share on every different platform, but my main ones are Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Everything is under Latinx Therapy. Thank you so much for having me.